Welcome to the Orlando Lady Boss Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Griffith, and I'm a content writer, business coach, and owner of the Orlando Lady Boss Podcast. Thank you for listening to the episode. If you like what you hear today, please go to iTunes or Google Play and rate this podcast. That's how other people like you can find the Orlando Lady Boss Podcast and hear the amazing stories of Orlando women that are featured here. So please share the love and amplify others' voices by giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes or Google Play. Thanks so much. Now let's get on with the show. Welcome to the episode. We're on episode 26 today, and today we're going to have such an Orlando-centric episode. I'm really excited to talk with our guest, who is Sarah El-Badri, and she's running for City Commissioner District 5 here in Orlando, which the election is this year. And it was really great to talk to Sarah because a couple things. One, I learned a lot about what happens on the city level in government. And, you know, we talk a lot about how we needed to be thinking more local about our politics. And this is a really great way for you to learn a little bit more. Exactly what does a city commissioner does? What are some of the issues that they're thinking about and they're trying to enact change in when they're in those positions? And we really get into like a lot of the guts about what makes a city, and Orlando, Orlando, and it's transportation and housing and jobs and like all of those important things that make us want to stay where we are. Sarah has great ideas about the future of Orlando and where we could see it going. And it was so nice chatting with her and learning a little bit more about who she is and why she's doing this. And if you're in District 5, I really encourage you to listen to her. If you're not in District 5, I think it's an interesting conversation to have because you're going to learn some really kind of neat things that I know I didn't know about what a city commissioner does, why it's important. How do you know whether or not you're in the city of Orlando, which is really kind of a cool little thing, and I want to give it away because Sarah's going to tell you about it. So if you just want to know a little bit more about what local government kind of looks like, this is a great episode for you. And in the show notes today, I'm going to put, if you don't know what district you're in, you should know whether you're in the city or the county. And in the show notes on the Orlando Lady Boss webpage for this show, I'm going to put where you can go to find out that information if you don't know right now. So I encourage you to jump over to those. I encourage you to visit that page later so you can find out who is running in your district, because in the city of Orlando, all the districts are rerunning this year. I'm not 100% sure about the county because I'm not in there myself, but that's something you should be looking into too. So with that, let's get on with to the episode so you can hear a little bit more about Sarah in the city of Orlando and all the great things that we have coming our way. Welcome to the show, everybody. Today, I am here with Sarah El-Badri. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yes. So I didn't really announce anything but your name. So tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. So my name is Sarah El-Badri, obviously. I'm an urban planner, I'm a community leader, and I am a very passionate resident of the city of Orlando. Professionally, through my urban planning, I focus a lot on transportation planning. Coming out of grad school, I went to Rollins for a master's in urban planning. I started the bike share program with Peter Martinez, and that was such an incredible project and really, I think, help start a conversation or grow a conversation in Orlando about bike infrastructure.
So you are, if you see those orange juice bikes rolling around town,
yeah, that's,
you can thank you for helping getting those implemented.
And
you can take the credit. You can take the credit. You're here.
I can take a little bit of the credit. But yeah, I'll talk about that later, just about how awesome it is to build communities and, and get to know people and build things together, especially in the places that you live. So professionally, I focus a lot on transportation planning, but more than that, in Orlando, I've done a couple other things. I've helped launch a coding boot camp in downtown Orlando, which I think has helped fill a pipeline for tech talent locally. I worked for the Main Street programs in the city of Orlando, which I think we all know is how critically important it is to support our small businesses and the communities that come out of that. And then personally, I've just been involved in organizing groups of folks who talk about how our city can grow better.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then I guess one more thing, I'm running for city council.
Yes, that's an important part to put on. What city council position are you running for?
Yeah, so I'm running for city council for the District 5, and that's an area that stretches from downtown Orlando out to Metro West and includes neighborhoods like Paramore, Rock Lake, Sunset, Ivy Lane, Mercy Drive, and I've already talked about Metro West, so yeah.
Wonderful. So what makes you so passionate about our city that you decided to run for a city commissioner seat in the first place?
So one of the things that I found about Orlando is that it's a place for opportunity and community, right? I've talked a little bit about that through my personal story. But for me, as we look into the future of what Orlando looks like, how do we ensure that Orlando is an inclusive and compassionate and fair and rich and vibrant city, right? We are at a tipping point. Orlando is ripe to grow and explode
I totally agree. I like to say that we're like teenagers. Like Orlando's like a teenager right now. And we're trying to figure out like what we're trying on all these like identities, trying to figure out which is the right one for us.
Exactly. And we have so much opportunity and potential in front of us. Is how do we make sure we're taking on the right kinds of opportunities and how do we make a city that we can be really proud of in the next century, right? So which is incredible to say because of how young Orlando is, right?
I know, right? I have friends that grew up here, and I didn't grow up here. I don't think you did either, right?
I did not.
You did not. Yeah. So I didn't actually grow up here. I grew up like an hour away. And when I hear people talk about what Orlando was like even 20 years ago, or like over by the UCF area, it was orange groves over there. Yeah. And it's just like how crazy different Orlando is. And even in the last decade since I've been here, it's changed. Downtown is just so vibrant. There's other neighborhoods popping up all over the city that are just very, very vibrant. And it's great to see Orlando growing like that because it makes you have like this hometown pride that you want to be here. You want to do something.
Yeah.
Be a part of it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think to balance that, to say how many folks are new to the area, and if you look at trends nationally, so many people are moving to Florida. There's 1,000 people a day that move to Florida. And Orlando is one of the fastest growing regions, so of course they're going to end up here. So we're going to have lots of new folks moving into the area. But also, how do we make sure that there's space for longtime residents?
Yeah, so definitely. So can you explain a little bit about what a city commissioner does? And I know it's a simple question, but sometimes it's hard to keep track on, like, what different government position does what?
Yeah.
And especially now in, like, the political atmosphere, everything is a little, we're like, okay, we need to be more local. But then we're like, we don't know what that actually means, though.
Yeah. So a really funny question or an interesting question that I hear a lot at City Hall when folks call City Hall is, do you live in the county or do you live in the city? And most folks, to be honest, don't even know how to answer that question. And then the follow-up question is, does your street sign have a fountain on it or an orange? Yeah. And so that's how to tell the difference between city and county. And so what I'm trying to say is it's really, going back to your point, hard to differentiate what local government does and who's in charge of what.
Yeah, right? Who's in charge of what is definitely.
So for the city of Orlando, if you live within the city of Orlando, a lot of that has to do with taxes and transportation, economic development. How do we support our small businesses here? How do we attract more businesses and employment opportunities? And then also as kind of a backbone or support structure for our community and culture, right? So we have lots of awesome and incredible venues in District 5. We have lots of opportunity to grow our art scene. I think a lot of folks would agree with that.
Right? Yeah.
And we've been able to attract really incredible educational opportunities. And now it's how do we make sure that infrastructure like that scales? We have a huge issue with transportation. I'm sure I'll talk about that later. Housing. There's just lots of things that, at a local level, city council is responsible for.
Well, in your...
And they don't do it alone, right?
Yeah, definitely. They don't do it alone because I know even, you know, we can get into a little bit of, you know, the insides of the politics, which I don't know too much, but there's also citizen boards that people can be a part of that help contribute to things that are going on in the city, along with the city commissioners, along with the mayor, along with the school board. There's all different, like, aspects of what goes into making the city and the county work, because there's equivalents on the county side,
too. Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would encourage anybody who listens to this to look into into the citizen advisory boards that are available throughout the city. There's always vacancies. There's nominating boards that are constantly looking to recruit folks to apply for these kinds of positions. And you know what? At the end of the day, it's having your voice heard, because a lot of some of the decisions that get made at city council happen at that board level, right? Where citizens make a recommendation and then it goes to city council to consider and review and potentially approve.
And I think that that's, you know, I know we're on like a little tangent, but I think that it is a good way for you to get involved in city or county politics or government and not take on the, I don't know if I want to run for a city commissioner seat or elected position, but I want to have some type of voice. There's boards about all types of stuff. So whatever you're interested in, you can look in. There's probably a board that will kind of fit your interests.
Yeah, obviously the greatest way to affect change is by understanding what the situation is, right? And so once you're a part of these kinds of boards and once you're in these kinds of rooms, you start understanding what the dynamics are and what the regulations are, what the nuances of the situation are, and then you start making decisions, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I definitely...
So, yeah, look into the citizens' boards, too. Everyone out there, when you're sitting there thinking, like, I want to do something in the city, but I don't know. And I'll put a link to it in the show links, because I have... It's like cityoforlando.gov/boards or something like that, but I'll look it up and I'll make it easy for you guys to find.
Yes, and that's the great thing about Google.
Yeah, Google it and you'll find it. And there's like 15 boards I know within the city. So let's get back to District 5 and some of the things you've kind of touched on District 5, but what are some of the challenges that District 5 has that you want to address as a city commissioner?
Yeah, so I think it going back to how quickly our city is growing. And if anybody knows what the dynamics of the city look like, District 5, which I've already said goes from Lake Eola out to Metro West, right? This is a huge district. Mm-hmm. And especially with the growth of downtown, especially as it moves west, we're seeing that those kinds of challenges regarding planning for our growth. Mm-hmm. And so that's definitely something that I want to tackle and make sure that as all of this redevelopment happens, as all of this new development comes in, how are we planning for it? How are we making sure there's connectivity between it? And then making sure that as it affects the existing businesses and residents here, making sure we're accommodating for that, right? And letting them know what's happening before it happens rather than as it's happening.
Yeah.
I guess the next thing I'd really like to touch on is jobs and jobs for our future, and not necessarily small makeshift part-time jobs or short-term jobs, really focusing on, as a city, we're attracting all of these great opportunities and great industries, and how do we prepare our residents to take on those positions, right? So I think that's really important. And then for me, obviously, as an urban planner and somebody who really is passionate about transportation planning, connectivity. District 5 is incredible, but there's things happening all over our region, and how do we connect people to that?
Yeah.
And we can't keep putting people in cars or forcing people into cars to get to those places.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that a mark of a really well-designed city that can become a powerhouse of a city has to have some type of public transportation option for its residents to really be able to grow and thrive in the right way. And we'll just never get there if we are not considering those types of options.
Yeah, if we're not more intentional about the way that we design our transportation, we will be falling behind, and we're competing with cities all over the country.
Yeah.
So we need to get more serious about this.
Yeah, and that's an interesting part of government that I've kind of noticed the more that I've gotten more involved on a local level, is a lot of local government is, how do we bring more jobs here? How do we make lives for the people within our city better? You know, it's not just like the roads and transportation, which are definitely important, but how do we make our citizens, you know, better off in all aspects? And so it's going to big companies and competing and going, and I know this isn't you specifically as the city commissioner, but the mayors.
City council is responsible for a lot of that. And so one of the ways that cities attract companies to come into their city is through incentives, mm-hmm. right? But what's really interesting is once you start publicly investing in your infrastructure, companies see that and say, okay, well, they've already put in money. They mm-hmm. already have skin in the game, and I want to be there because it's gonna mm-hmm. be a game changer for my business.
Yeah.
So that's an example of that is Amazon. Mm-hmm. So Amazon just moved and created this huge facility, high-tech facility at Lake Nona, and it's because of they've seen the investment that's gone into Lake Nona. Mm-hmm. And nobody, the city and the county and the region did not offer Amazon incentives anything. To be
they just
there.
Saw the things that are happening and going, this is a good place. And I also want to say that, too, it's not just the infrastructure, but it's also the arts and community and sports and all of those things. Because if a big company is going to come in and they're going to relocate employees or try to attract employees from elsewhere, those employees want to come and know that they can have a good quality of life when they get here. And so having all of these things in place, and I think sometimes we hear these things in the news, like, why do we need this or why do we need that? It's because we're looking for ways to attract, you know, just because it's not for you doesn't mean that there isn't someone that's really interested in it, and there needs to be something there to fill that for that person, especially for attracting more people to the city.
Yeah, I say attracting and retaining talent.
And retaining,
obviously,
yeah.
UCF is a huge educational engine, right? And we graduate in the region about 100,000 graduates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so these are all folks that could be working in our region and could be working in Orlando, but start thinking about the opportunities elsewhere. And so if we can't retain that talent, mm-hmm. It's essentially a brain drain. Right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. We're taking bright young minds and then sending them out somewhere else, which is, you know, not beneficial to the growth of our city in a positive way. You recently did a talk at Nerd Night about Jane Jacobs, which is an urban planner, and she is someone who talks a lot about a bottom-up approach to city development and city planning versus a top-down approach, and you are a big advocate of that same bottom-up approach. So we won't get into all the details of the talk specifically, but what exactly is that bottom-up approach to urban planning? Yeah. Or in city development.
So I love Jane Jacobs. She's been such an inspiration for me as an urban planner. And she has this really great quote about cities have the capacity of providing something for everybody only because and only when they're created by everybody, right? And mm-hmm. that really speaks to making sure that everyone has a voice in the places that they live. That top-down approach that Jane Jacobs fought against is we see that all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
For her, one of her most critical fights was against an interstate, essentially, a highway that was going to go through a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Orlando, we see that. We know what that
yeah.
looks like. That is a clear divide in our city.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So it's about empowering people who live and work and have businesses in an area to stand up for their neighborhoods and their communities. They have deep pride and ownership. It's just making sure that their voice can be heard and amplified to a point that speaks truth to power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's about keeping the integrity of what's already there and just building upon that instead of coming from the outside and going, hey, we don't like this. Let's change this to make it look like how we want it to look without listening to the people there.
Yeah. And it's understanding the richness that comes with that and mm-hmm. the importance of that in terms of economic value,
mm-hmm.
right? There is not just a cultural value, but there's also an economic value in having real street life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Orlando feels very transitional to a lot of people. We're becoming less so, but there are these pockets where people have lived there. And so we need to be cognizant of, like, what those people experience, where their homes are. They've been there their whole lives, and making sure that they're, you know, being heard as far as not being left behind when the city is on this rampant development track, because they're the ones that were here before anyone else cared about what was going on in the city. So they're as important as the new people coming in, too.
Yeah, and I think also just understanding, even if you are a newcomer mm-hmm. to Orlando, that there's a space for you, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
this isn't just about a whole bunch of new Whole Foods and mm-hmm. Starbucks, and it becomes homogenous, right?
Yeah.
Like, Orlando then becomes just like any other city.
Of course.
So what makes us different?
Yeah.
We need to celebrate that.
What makes us special? And there's always good ideas that come from elsewhere, too. And so having those voices and going, oh, we saw this that worked where I was from, maybe something like this. And like you said, because you're not originally from Orlando, I know we didn't talk about this, but I feel like I've read about this somewhere, but you guys saw bike programs in other places and thought, hey, this could be something that could work in Orlando. Let's bring it in and see what this looks like and how it would work here.
Yeah, I definitely. As an urban planner, one of the things that I do is study what other cities are doing. What is a best practice? What's working? What's not working? How do we figure out lessons learned and bring that to Orlando?
Yeah, and make it better here than it is wherever else it is. So what are some big ideas you would love to see put into place as Orlando grows?
Yeah, so one of, I think this just goes back to where our nation is currently, right? And so I think we all kind of understand what's happening regarding especially budget. When we talk about infrastructure, we're seeing that investments are happening, but not necessarily at a local level and not necessarily in existing places. So I think one of the things that I'd really like to focus on if I became the next city commissioner is how do we become less dependent on traditional national lines of funding, right? So here's a good example of that. This past week I've been able to tour a few places around Orlando that have made major investments in the community through their programming and have been able to attract or attain grant dollars. It's through a community development block grant, CDBG, and it's a federal funding, right? And so they've been able to build new gyms, new kitchens, and in these places, for instance, the gym is now has been a staple in the community for a really long time, but wasn't up to par. And this block grant helped, is bringing so much pride into that, and the number of kids that will be attracted to play in that gym is going to be incredible. And that is a hook to other programming and other ways to get kids into a pipeline of employment, mentorship, right? This is incredible. And the other place that I toured has a new kitchen, right? And it's an incubator kitchen. It does culinary classes. Oh, it's a commissary really kitchen. Cool. There's a space for food entrepreneurs. It really moves them into this pipeline of, I really want to become my own boss. I want to own my own business. I'm really passionate about my food, and I want to take it to the people. I don't have a kitchen. And this kitchen is providing that space. And there's also an event space attached to it. But it came from a community block grant, right? And so at a federal level, though, there's risk that that goes away. That funding will not be available. So now community organizations will suffer in the future.
We don't have control over what the federal government is going to decide to give us or not give.
Thank you for being so succinct about that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll say it. You don't have to.
How do we plan for the future, right? So we want to make sure our community organizations are supported. We want to make sure the folks that are doing really good work here can continue to do that. And if at the federal level we're losing that funding, how at the local level can we ensure the sustainability of programs like that? So thinking about those kinds of things. Same thing with affordable housing. We see at a federal and state level, funding for affordable housing going away. At a state level, it gets robbed every year to backfill the general revenue or the budget at a state level. Okay, so locally, there's opportunities like Airbnb. Airbnb is growing. We know how much of a tourism industry we have in Orlando, how many hotels are popping up, but other folks find Airbnb as another opportunity for them to rent a hotel room.
Well, Airbnb is interesting too, because I actually know a little bit about this because of a client I work with, and there's lots of laws and regulations that are around Airbnb, and I don't know like how many people know this, but like most of the places where you're really allowed to have Airbnb is not in the greater Orlando. It's more by Disney. Like, there's zoning and things like that that go along with, like, where you can actually have vacation homes like that. Or rentals, Airbnb rentals.
Yeah,
and
so
like
I think that's a place that we need to start tackling, right? The way that the Uber conversation came up locally was interesting, the way that it was handled. With Airbnb, one of the things that I'm talking about regarding affordable housing is around the country, Airbnbs are taxed the way hotel rooms are taxed. We do not see that same thing happening here.
Yeah.
Is that not an opportunity now to create a fund for affordable housing because of the tourism or the tax dollars that are coming in through Airbnb? That's just one idea. But there's so many other ways that we need to be figuring out how as a city do we take on ownership of these things that traditionally have been a state and federal solution.
Well, I think, too, you know, you touch on the Airbnb and the Uber, and one of the things that I talk about a lot when we talk about disruptors in an industry, right, we go, oh, this is a disruptor, and it's less expensive, it's more convenient, so all these things. But when they come in and they, like, actually disrupt and take over and start dominating the industry, they have to start picking up the slack for those tax dollars that now are not getting, because a lot, like the hotel industry, the taxi industry, they're all regulated in ways to give tax dollars back to help fund roads, fund infrastructure, things like that, because they're actively using those resources. So they should be paying for some of those resources as they're using them. So we have to start going, okay, as these things come in and they become popular, and they are better solutions to what's out there right now, but they need to kind of pay their share
too. You definitely hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, it always is technology three steps in front
of government. Of course. We have to keep up with, the government has to keep up with how technology is growing.
Yeah, and so I think that's something that I would bring to city council, is somebody who understands, has fresh perspective, and knows what's happening in terms of the marketplace, and how do we make sure that these new these disruptors are at the end of the day ultimately contributing to our community.
Yeah. So transportation is one of those issues for you that you have a lot of ideas about. What are some of the ideas that you have about transportation, how we could implement transportation in new and better ways?
Yeah, so certainly we need to do better about the connectivity that we have in our city, and I would say a major piece of that is SunRail. Mm-hmm. Right now, SunRail is not working well. Mm-hmm. We need to figure out how to fix it, especially because as cities, municipalities that are involved along the SunRail corridor, we'll be responsible financially for that system. Mm-hmm. So how do we get more people using SunRail? How do we connect SunRail better to other places? Right now, you can't even get to the airport using SunRail.
Yeah.
It's a transfer to a bus, and hopefully, I hope, those schedules are aligned. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so SunRail is something that I really like to focus on. Better schedule for it daily, making sure you're not stuck in this middle of the day gap.
Oh my gosh, that middle of the day gap, I know that for me has left me going, I don't know if I'm going to take the SunRail because I don't want to be stuck somewhere for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A later night schedule, and I think weekends, right? I think more people, once they realize the accessibility that SunRail could provide, would help with our ridership numbers, and then from there help with the way that we budget for it, and the economic development that happens along the corridor, which I think is especially important. Transit-oriented development is something we really need to be focusing on, not just citywide, but regionally as well. If you can afford to live somewhere along the SunRail corridor and then take the train in and be able to get to your job, walk to your job, how many small businesses, how many places benefit from that kind of connectivity?
So many businesses would, and people would benefit from that. I mean, seriously, if we had really good transportation systems, you would see, you, listener out there, you might be able to only have one car between the two, you know, between two people in a household.
What a huge cost saving.
Yeah, how big would that? And then you could supplement with, like, other little ways besides the transportation. The other thing that I remember hearing when we were talking about transportation, because I'm a big proponent of the SunRail, and like, let's get more SunRail, more feeders, like more access is going to get more ridership. And you have to build the infrastructure first before people might necessarily be able to use it in the way that you really need to. And I remember reading that, like, when New York City started their first subway, it was like 2 blocks. Who would use a subway for 2 blocks? You have to start somewhere and then build out on that. And that's where we are with the SunRail right now. So I'd hate to see, personally, that go away. So
yeah, and something else that I'd like to focus on beyond rail, because I think rail is easier or more clean for people to think about, is our bus system right now is so sad. Mm-hmm. And I would say a lot of the folks that work in that space are doing the best job that they can, but you can't do that when you are asking, literally every year, our Lynx is on an annual budget. Mm-hmm. So there, how can you do any long-term planning on an annual budget when you don't know what kind of commitments cities are making to you? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, another reason that our system is so sad is the way that we do land use, right? Mm-hmm. So if we allow developers to kind of dictate the way that our city grows, when we need to supply the infrastructure, when folks need to connect into the city and other places, we're now responsible for that. So short-term, great boost in tax revenue. Mm-hmm. Long-term, what are we spending to connect to those places?
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned was about real estate development. And we talked previously, and you mentioned to me that the property appraiser said that the development that's happening in the city right now for housing is mostly $500,000 homes and above. which is crazy because most people cannot afford a home in that price range. So what do we do about things like that? Like, how do we solve that kind of problem?
Yeah, I think we need to understand how that problem comes up, right? And obviously it's profit driven, right? Mm-hmm. So if there is a market for folks that are living in $500,000 homes, but how do we also make sure that folks who can't afford that can also be housed, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really just understanding what that problem is, and then how do we incentivize other housing diversity that makes sense for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of affordability and in terms of size, we're seeing shrinking households, right?
Of course.
There is a generation that's waiting to have children because of
all types of reasons.
the finance environment we've recently encountered, right? So we need to understand what that looks like and make sure that we can provide space for folks like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just an Orlando issue, and I think what we really need to see is who's doing this well and how do we emulate that and how do we incentivize a housing stock that is more than just $500,000 homes.
Well, and of course it makes sense from a, like you said, a profit-driven level, because my husband and I are looking for houses right now, and we're getting priced out in neighborhoods, and we don't have nothing to put towards, we have a pretty decent amount of money we can put towards a house, and some of these neighborhoods that we really love, and the houses are not gigantic, we're just being completely priced out of, and developers are coming in and tearing down those homes and putting ones in three times the size, and they're able to charge three times the price for it. And I know that that is something that a lot of people are paying attention to, because as we start expanding out from the city center, that's going to start happening in other neighborhoods too. I think it's an important issue. And definitely, you talked about especially in District 5, that westward development, we're starting to see that right now. And I'm going to say the word gentrification will be happening if we're not paying attention to what's going on with development in the area.
Yeah, and I would say it's not gentrification directly, it's the consequences of gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happens when improvements are made in neighborhoods, right? Okay, mm-hmm. And what are those improvements? Who are they for? What are the long-term consequences of that?
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing, that this huge issue that recently came up in terms of the Milk District,
mm-hmm.
of developers coming in, knocking down older homes, and then building duplexes, that's a higher and better use, mm-hmm. right, as a developer for that plot of land.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing similar things happen in Paramore, right, where mm-hmm. investors are coming in, purchasing homes, holding on to them, either renting them out as they are, maybe doing some improvements, but long term, what is the likelihood that that home, which is zoned, could be zoned for a duplex or multifamily, becomes that? It means that homes will be demoed. The character of that neighborhood will certainly change. So I think it's realizing that and paying attention to it now.
And
right? Like we're seeing it happen elsewhere. We know it's going to happen here. What do we do about it?
Yeah, and try to get on top of it before we actually see it happen, because those neighborhoods add character to what the city is. And so it's definitely important. Sarah, what is a piece of advice that has stuck with you over the years?
So I don't know if it's necessarily advice, but a quote, right? So it's certainly been motivating to me about the things that I am involved in. And it's from President Barack Obama. And it's, we are the ones that we've been waiting for. We are the change that we seek.
Mm-hmm.
And really it speaks to me as someone who, if I have the skills to do something, mm-hmm. I need to step up and do something about.
Yeah.
That's
whole, like, if not me, who, if not now, when type of idea.
Exactly.
I've definitely felt that too. And I think, it's so weird to feel like the world kind of changed in the last year, but it did. And everyone, I think, on all sides of the political spectrum, regardless of who you are, understands that that's kind of where we are.
It's kind of incredible what I've seen is how many people have gotten more engaged in their communities, more engaged in politics, and more engaged in what they see as being better. And it's really, it's kind kind of inspiring, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is the democracy that founding fathers... I don't know.
Let me back
up. I mean, let me strike that a little bit, right? I think in some ways, yes, in some ways, no. But the engagement level, that increase in engagement is very...
on a philosophical American. Level, this is what the founding fathers wanted. We're laughing because we're both women sitting here and we were left out of the conversation when the Constitution was made, but... But you know what? It doesn't matter now because we can still make those changes that we need to, that we can see in the world.
This is certainly an evolving country.
Yeah.
And you're right. Just the mere fact that, that I get to run for office as a person of color, as a child of immigrants, right? Like, that's really amazing. And one of the privileges of being an American.
Yeah.
Right? So, super cool.
It is amazing. Well, good luck on your city commissioner, District 5 run. And if you guys don't know who you're voting for city commissioner, or whether or not you're in the city, so remember, look at your street sign. If you have an orange, I love that! You have an orange, you're in the county, and if you have a fountain, you're in the city.
Whoa, cool design thinking. I don't know who came up with that one, but I really appreciate it.
That is really brilliant.
It's not just in Orlando, but it is a really, I like it.
That's really brilliant. And I'm going to put in the show notes, I'll put a way for you to find who your city or county commissioner seat is, so you know who you're voting for, whether it's Sarah, whether it's someone else that's running. Sarah, where can we find you on the internet?
So you can find me online. My website is orlandonext.com, or on Facebook at Sarah L. Badri. It's like L. Badri. If you follow Rihanna on Instagram, it's not related at all. That's my last name, L. Badri. So Sarah L. Badri for Orlando on Facebook.
Wonderful. And I will put all of those links in the show note, too.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being on here. I feel like we got like a little bit of a civic lesson today, which was fantastic. So we will catch you guys next time. I hope you learned something and have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us here today on the Orlando Lady Boss podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please check it out on iTunes and Google Play to find all of our back episodes of other amazing Orlando women sharing their stories. While you're there, if you love what we do, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating. It will help others discover us too. You can also check out the blog, OrlandoLadyBoss.com, where you can find even more information about career, feminism, community building, and women-focused stories. If you're on social media, make sure to like me on Facebook at Facebook.com/OrlandoLadyBoss. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at OrlandoLadyBoss. And if you're a woman in Orlando doing cool things and making an impact in your own community, make sure you hashtag Orlando Lady Boss so we can share our stories together. And that's the episode. Until next time, stay strong and go out and make an impact in your own world.